We're here for you guys. Yeah. We're gonna jump into 1M. I've had the doctor on before, talking about all kinds of stuff toy related. Now I get the doctor plus one because Christian doesn't like us, and that's okay.
This can be Christian.
Perfect. As long as you only, that's the one you can look through his eye, right?
Yeah. See?
So I need you to only do that the whole episode if you're going to bring him out. Yeah. But before we go any further, please introduce yourselves and tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm Ray Tallison, and work with Dave and Christian on 1M Robots. In my free time, I'm an illustrator and painter.
Nice. Dave?
I'm Dave. I'm a graphic designer by day and toy builder by night. Ray and I we kind of developed 1M on the road trip back from Designer Con in not last year, but the year before. So whatever year that is. Mm-hmm. And Ray was blessed with me.
It was like over 30
like some a 17
hours.
17 hour car ride.
Yeah.
Well, coming back, it was 18. Not that I was counting. And going there, it was like 17. So it was well over 30 hours. We actually spent more time in the van than we did at Designer Con.
That's heartbreaking. What was cool is, Dave at one point visited San Diego, and he had just made mention of this like robot idea, and we were walking around a swap meet, and he said, we've got this idea. It's me and two guys, and we're just going to like, all I remember you saying is like, we're going to go for it. And then you talked about clothes and swappable parts, but like, because it's not in my head, I had no concept of like what this means. And so to hear like all of that, and then fast forward, we don't talk about it until we get to Designer Con, and your booth is immaculate. Your guys' jumpsuits are perfect. How the things are stored. Like let's start there. Let's start with booth design and tell me how you came up with the idea to make it look this like workshop-esque, like industrial futuristic look.
So Designer Con, you've been many times. Mm-hmm. It's I kind of did this my first time as well. When you go, it's a lot of like custom toy designers, and they're spending so much time on their craft that when you go, you get a black table, two chairs, and that's it. And so a lot of designers are like, oh crap, and they just like maybe get like a shelf, and they kind of just put a couple things on their table, and that's it, you know, and, which is totally fine. But having gone there and done it 1 year, and then Ray and I, the 1 year where we kind of decided to do this, we actually called it Decon Recon. We're like, let's go to Designer Con and let's like scope out what everybody's doing and actually understand what we could do to like, our idea was like, if we got a 10 by 10 space, let's just go crazy and make it as killer as possible. So our main idea was, let's make people think when they come that we're backed by a huge toy company. We wanted our space to look that high end. That was like our goal. So, and I think Ray's an illustrator, me being a designer, Christian is an industrial designer. Like the three of us kind of put our brains together, and we're like, so we kind of started sketching out concepts and ideas. But the funny thing is we had to take this entire 10-foot by 10-foot booth from Colorado to California without having to ship it. So we can't just build like these giant walls. So me and my dad actually built like, we built it in, what was it, Ray? Like 12 panels?
Yeah.
Like 6 and 6 or?
Yeah, 6 and 6.
Maybe 16 panels. Yeah, so we built it to break down into small panels so we can slide into the back of the minivan.
The problem is we measured, we had my car, my wife's car, and we measured it. Well, I don't know. We measured it wrong anyway. And so the panels were built too big.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we just thought, oh, you know, let's do a run through like a month or two early just to see, just to make sure everything fits. And yeah, nothing fit. So we were like worried about what we were going to do, or we're going to rent a van. I have a big ProMaster, but we couldn't all fit in there because it only has two seats. And so we were trying to figure that out last minute. And luckily we were able to talk Dave's dad into letting us borrow the minivan.
Mm.
So we rolled into San Diego
in
style.
Rotella Resale, your premier collectibles, toys, and novelty retailer. Find the best and hard-to-find diecast vehicles and action figures. Some of the most popular vinyl LPs, Zippo lighters, and comics. Support the best artists with our rock t-shirts and posters. You will find so much more at RotellaResale.com with free shipping on U.S. orders. Use promo code RADIO for 10% off your order. Visit RotellaResale.com. That is RotellaResale.com.
Yeah, we had gone to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
And all the concrete walls and stuff. So it was kind of like, oh, what if we did something along those lines? So literally, it was a wooden frame in the back and like thin masonite that was like nailed onto the wooden frame. And then I actually took drywall mud and just like stuccoed the entire wall and like knocked it down and sanded it. And then Ray and I, we spent like a couple Saturdays like testing different textures and paints, and it was going to be like a black wall, but then it was too dark. And so, yeah, it was quite an ordeal, but it turned out pretty cool. And then the stands that we had, the ammo cans, I actually found those at a yard sale.
Awesome.
I was like putzing around at a yard sale, and there was this old dude, and he had three of them, and he wanted like $40 a piece. I ended up talking him down to $15 a piece.
Oh my gosh. So besides that, your booth is also probably the most welcoming too, the way that it's set up. Cause it was, we could enter the booth space with you and be around and look at everything, which is key. That was an interesting choice. And I loved it. I loved being there.
Well, that's good to hear. Cause one of the things we've talked about for next year is maybe moving those, you know, where the robots were, moving that out.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, you can still come into the booth, but it does kind of, I don't know, maybe we should rethink that.
Yeah, we ended up.
One of the things is that, you know, a few times, because I'm not like Dave, and I don't, you know, if you want to talk, I'll talk to you, but
yeah,
I'm not going to initiate the conversation. But you know, one thing that I noticed because of that is, you know, I'm kind of sitting there and watching, and a lot of people, when people are looking at the robots, they kind of block it from everybody that's walking by. So we talked about maybe moving them out so that people could be on both sides looking at them. And so, yeah, we've already started talking about next year.
Yeah. Because you guys, I'm assuming, have a booth in Vegas now.
Whenever they come out, yeah.
Okay. Which is like a whole new experience, right? None of us have seen the inside of that place. I think what's really cool about being there the first year that we all go is we're all on the same page. No one knows anything about this space. So it'll be really cool to go.
I'm super curious about the collector base, like, because Anaheim, it's been in California for so long, and there's so many, you know, you have like studios out there and you have a bunch of game companies out there. And so I think a lot of those artists and stuff come down. And so I'm curious what's going to happen in Vegas, if it's just going to be like a whole new crowd of collectors and maybe some people come over, because that's a pretty decent haul for you guys in California. That's still a 5-6 hour drive.
Yeah, I was luckily I was only an hour away from DesignerCon last year. But yeah, now getting to Vegas, we're all driving 5 or 6 hours or flying for $75. That's the weird thing that we're in. It's such a cheap flight, but then you have to take everything with you. So we're trying to weigh all those options.
Right. And then, you know, I mean, with that, you know, you probably have to stay overnight.
Yeah.
Whereas before. But I mean, I feel like, you know, 3D Retro moved to Vegas. So I think collectors, there must be collectors in the area. So, you know, maybe it'll attract some new people. And you know, I mean, the hardcore folks are going to come out.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Let's talk about the idea of 1M, because it's a crazy idea to make such large figures that have swappable parts and all these things. And you guys nailed it. Oh, Christian's coming in.
Oh,
we're doing it.
There he is. Christian's phone.
Do we like, are we supposed to boo him when he gets in? What are we supposed to do here?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, definitely make fun of him. He's probably outside. I bet he's outside on
his block of his dog.
Yeah.
Do you want the truth?
Oh, there he is. There he is. The truth is, you were walking. You were with out there walking. You slipped and fell.
I'm glad you made it.
I appreciate it. Better late than never.
Yeah. You made it a good point. We're just about to talk about the idea of 1M, because it's a big undertaking to make swappable parts that all have the right magnets, that all have the right paint, and the three different, I think there's three different robots, correct?
Yeah.
And so doing all of this stuff and then nailing it and not having hiccups and not having crazy things, at least from the consumer side. So tell me where the idea started and tell me what it took to make it happen.
Well, no hiccups, yeah, no hiccups, guys. There were no hiccups.
Yeah. And we got it done in like 9 months, like from the time we actually kind of started getting together and working on it. So, okay, so funny story. Christian starts at our company, at Otterbox, as an industrial designer. He's brand new. And I hadn't met him yet because I was on vacation or something. And so when I came into the office, I go to my desk and I've got toys all over my desk. He's got toys on his desk. And I was like, hey, are you Christian? He's like, yeah, I'm the new guy. He's like, our manager told me that I'd really get along with you. And I was like, oh, sweet. And so we started talking toys like right off the bat. And Ray and I had already kind of been bouncing some ideas around in our head. And Christian, foolishly on his part, I think, he was like, yeah, man, if you ever like need help with anything, or like, I've always wanted to mess around with toys too, so let me know. And I was like, I might have something for you. So we started like, we would do like meetings at Ray's house or at my house, and we would chat and just like talk through and start the planning. So that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, and the ride from DCon back to Fort Collins, Christian was the new guy. The new guy. There's a new guy at Otter who said he might want to help. So I'll ask him, see what happens.
Well, and then at the time joining too, when someone has an idea, it's like, oh, we should do this. And you're saying it in passing. So in my head, it's all right, we'll see if this turns into anything. Zero expectation that it would. A week later, Dave's like, you want to come over to my house and we get this going?
Yeah.
So already I couldn't believe it. I was mentally sizing you up as well, because you said you were into toys and everything, and you were already talking about certain designers and aesthetics. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm a little over my head here. But no, you graciously opened up your home and were like, hey, here's some ideas. Here's some areas we need help in, and let's just see what sticks on the wall here.
Mm. So how did you settle on the idea of, I mean, finding the team is already like, that's the best part of the Ocean's 11 movie. So now that you have the team, how are you settling on the Ocean's 1M movie? How are you settling on, like, we're doing robots with swappable parts and here's the lore?
Well, I just kind of hang out, and these two guys do most of the work. So, I mean, that's me.
Yeah, you're the brains.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm the brains and the looks, obviously.
Well, really, I would say let's tie back to you, Dave. In terms of who Dr. Toys is and what your builds are, in general, it's taking found objects, making them into robots. So you already have the robots as part of your background. So I think when we first met, we discussed how can we leverage your platform in a way that one is appealing. And I think you have an even deeper story, which is, man, I'm making these one-offs all the time, but it's not profitable. How can we make something that's consistent, functionally unique, and has roots to these found objects from 1M? So I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah. No, that's totally what had happened. Was I had gone to DesignerCon and I was selling my custom creation. And I think we've talked about this on the last podcast, where, you know, somebody spends $100 on a toy that you made. That's amazing. It's like mind blowing. You're like, somebody actually opened their wallet and spent that for something that I made. It's so humbling. But then on the flip side, you're like, oh crap, I spent like 20 hours on that and $100. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
So like Christian said, that was part of the conversation of like, could we make our own toy that we could like produce? And then it was like, you know, we all work at a company that deals with tooling. And so we were like, oh, maybe we can get some tooling. And we looked at that, we're like, oh shoot, dang, that's crazy expensive. And then it was like, well, like if we 3D model them, could we 3D print them? And so that's where Christian kind of came in and started, even like right off the bat, we just started making a couple of prototypes just to see if it would even work. And we went through a bunch of prototypes. I mean, there was a bunch that were just like real turkeys.
Mm-hmm. Turkey. That's a good way. That is a nice way to say it. When I go through prototypes, I don't use the word turkey. So that's a good one. So you're having this idea and trying to run through. I think we all dream of having like our own toys. I think you guys are at this point in the story, you're on the cusp of that. You're like, man, we could have our own toy, like our own thing, our baby. And then you run through these prototypes, and then there's a day in which you hit the first one. You're like, this is what it's supposed to be. This is how it works. Tell me about that day.
Christian, what do you remember?
Yeah, I remember, really, it's all these assembling of parts. It's, all right, we have to invest in a printer now. That's new for all three of us. What's the quality we want it to be in? We investigated FDM with filament. We later turned to resin just for the post-processing side of things. It's a lot easier to clean and just less of a headache. So that's kind of where we started looking at what are the tools that we need. And then a lot of it was learning. I would model something up, kick it over to Dave. And that's nice for me because I hate working with the printers. They're messy. Yeah. It's a long process. Thankfully, Dave has that toy maker in him where he's already used to cleaning his found objects. So he handled the printer really well. And then it's just sending pictures to us like, hey, look what just came out of the oven, some fresh baked models. And it's one thing to look at it just printed, but I think the magic touch is seeing Dave completely paint it, completely weather it. And even as it's getting weathered, those are the stories that are coming through in the robot where it's, oh, here's this scuff on this right arm. How did that happen? And you start being a kid again. You're imagining, all right, why did it weather in a certain way? You're adding character to this character within itself. So it's always magical. And thankfully, because of where we work, we're in this creative field. It's fun having this give and take of ideas. At some point, you don't want to get jealous or envious of whose idea got put out there over the other. Instead, it was a fun refinement of things where I have a 3D modeling background, but because Dave is more painterly and more two-dimensionally oriented, there's a lot of learning that I got just from watching him and his experience applying color, applying paint. So all that being said, it was exciting, hectic, and a lot of learning.
These two guys did, I mean, I joke around that they did all the work, but they really did do all the work. And so I just got to see these things. And,
yeah,
you know, for me, some of the, what were they, turkeys? I mean, all the iterations were, you know, every time I saw one, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is what we're making.
Yeah.
You know, it was great. I mean, because, yeah, you know, they're working, you know, they work in the same office. So they got to, you know, they were working on these things, and then I would see like the results. And so, yeah, it was every time I would like see something new, it was great. You know, I mean, they did an incredible job. And, you know, I mean, I didn't do much until, you know, there's like, oh, we've got like 5,000 parts and we need, you know, silver paint put on every one of them. So I'd go over to Dave's house and I'd sit there and paint things, you know, but yeah, I mean, seeing it all come together, you know, it was amazing. I mean, every time I would see something, I was just like, oh my gosh, when do I get mine?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as cool as this. And I still don't have them. I tried to get them to put an eye that I could look through, but
yeah,
they didn't do that. So
we all fall short. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Something cool that Christian touched on was the collaboration side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were all kind of just kind of sketching out some different ideas, and then Christian would take some things and he would kind of put his spin on it, and then he would send it over, and then even Christian and I would get on a call and he'd like, you know, spin through the 3D model, and it'd be like, oh, hey, what if you did this? And I would like sketch something up, and he's like, oh, okay, I see that. And then he would like even tweak it on the spot. And it was like this really cool, you know, being a designer for, you know, as long as I have, and same with Ray. And then, you know, Christian's fairly new in the field, maybe 6-7 years, but being able to work with artists and collaborate and not have that, like, well, I came up with, it was just like, we all kind of even spitball ideas, and it's like, oh, what if we added something here? And Christian would say, hey, I put some vents like on the side here. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I hadn't thought of that. And so the collaboration side as an artist was really, really fun.
That is a cool thing. I mean, there's always potential where egos get in the way, but to have a team that is working together and like almost has their own roles, and then everyone understands that it's collaborative. That's super helpful. I've only found that a couple times, so that's awesome that a whole team is doing that. What was crazy is that, like, Dave, your process videos, as we know, like, are crazy. Like, your YouTube videos and what you do with Instagram. I remember when it started with the robots, and I saw almost no process with, like, the formation of the robots, all process with the dirtying of the clothes. And it was like finding out how to do grease mark. Like, I've never wondered that in my life. How do I make a grease stain? That's a crazy, but like, it was, you guys took the care in even those parts of the story, which is cool.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1.82 inch. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters. Now sponsor Toys on Tap. That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
So tell me about the clothes part. And then we're going to head towards packaging, because that is an unreal thing too.
So my mom like sewed all of these jumpsuits for us. And we had, we brought a total of 60 robots with us.
Mm-hmm.
So she sewed all the jumpsuits, and then she sewed all of the pants. And then we purchased some t-shirts and we made our own designs and did that. So, and that was another iteration. It was, again, like, just, Christian, Ray, and I, we got together and we're like, okay, what do we want these characters to be? Like, how do they, and then we started thinking through, like, could the clothes actually distinguish them to be their own kind of character? So you've got the mechanic bot who's in a jumpsuit, which makes sense. And then we have the medical bot, the med bot. So he's kind of more like an EMT would wear, like some cargo pants and that kind of stuff. And then the cyber bot, he's got sweatpants and tennis shoes on because he just sits behind a computer all day. So that was kind of our humor behind that. So
yeah,
my mom made all those. And then like, but when you get them sewn and made, they were so clean and they were kind of like, eh. And so I was like, I'm just going to, I had no clue what I was doing to weather them. I was just like, it's just the process of experimenting and playing with it. And
yeah,
it was pretty awesome.
I think I have some questions in design choices as well. Where are you drawing in the sculpting of these robots? Where are you drawing inspiration from? And then I don't know if people, I mean, they'll see it as we post it, but like the bodies aren't mechanic. It's still like, would like Barbie body is a good way to describe that? Like what you would call it?
Ken body.
Yeah. And so
Joe body.
Yeah. G.I. Joe body. Sorry. But so how would you describe, those two design choices? Like where are you pulling influence for the mechanic or for the robotic parts? And then what made you go with the G.I. Joe body versus a robotic?
Yeah. So the body itself, like we wanted it to be poseable, and Christian can talk to the actual industrial design of making joints and 3D printing stuff. It was like, there's no way that we're going to be able to get knees and stuff to bend. So the idea, we were essentially like, hey, we can just purchase some pre-made 1/6 scale bodies and we'll call them like androids. But the bodies, they, you know, they're like a male figure, so they have nipples on them. And I was like to me, that was like, that's like almost too human. So like, as OCD as I mean, I was like, guys, let's like nip off all the nips and we'll sand them down so that it'll be a little bit more like a robotic form. So I remember Ray telling me, he said he was leaving work one day and he's like, all right, guys, we'll see you later. I'm going to a nipple sanding party.
They're like, what? Yeah, what? Yep. Did it all night long, cut nipples off and then sanded them.
Christian could talk about like the idea behind the actual design of like why we went with a body, because just the mechanics of it are probably just way too nuts.
Yeah.
Well, we were really ambitious with the designs at first. When we first pitched this 1 million robots, let's do 5 individual characters. We'll have the arms switch out. We'll even have the torsos and the legs switch out. And as we're modeling and making everything, a month or two went by just to design one head. And we're like, crap, there's no way we're going to be able to do a whole body, let alone have it articulate the way we want it to. So it's actually kind of nice and a saving grace. We found a pre-made body in a way to almost cause an homage to what you do, Dave, with Dr. Toys, taking found objects and making it work. So we got a little plus out of that with a little bit of story. As for where we get our design influence, it's kind of what we do for our jobs. Both you, Dave, as a creative, I mean, all three of us as creatives, but my background is in industrial design, giving purpose to why an object looks a certain way. So as we're crafting each character, we're creating these backstories, and you want that story to align with the aesthetics. So for the mechanic bot, for example, Dave, I know you have an example in hand with you. I don't. But if you look at the head closely, it's actually modeled after motorcycle engines. That's what we looked at a little bit, where it's, all right, he's a mechanic robot. What parts and languages can we take from that environment and make it a robot that feels like it belongs there? So I looked at motorcycle engines. We looked at welding masks. And you can see that language starting to stick in there, even down to the skull indentation on the front of the head. That just screams really punk, and it screams a lot like it belongs in a mechanic shop. And then on the flip side, you look at the mechanical bot. If you were to look at a lot of medical design, it's a lot of soft forms. Look at Baymax from Big Hero 6. He's a soft plushy guy because he's approachable, and you want to feel safe in a medical field. So that's where those soft forms start coming from. That's where some of the tubes on the arms come from. It's from that language you would find in the operating room. Mm-hmm. And then finally, with the Cyberbot, that's the first bot we made. As we're investigating robots, how can you not think of Star Wars? So if you look at it, there's definitely a lot of pit droid in there, a lot of dark side robot language in there. And I think that's where we got the most self-indulgent of, let's just make something really cool and we'll figure out the story later. So we cheated on him a little bit, but it screams our passion for the robot and the process.
Yeah. What's interesting about the nipple part, I do want to hear what you said, but the nipple part is interesting. When Barbie was first being made and whatever her first name was, Handler or whatever, they were all together. They were figuring out the Barbies and the design and stuff. They had to shave off the nipples off of the original Barbie so that it wasn't too real. So, like, you guys are in line with some of the biggest toy companies. So, like, good job. But what were you going to say, Dave?
I was just going to say the designs themselves, they kind of, as we continue to work on them, they kind of started to tell our story. Mm-hmm. We kind of had, this was something that the three of us would sit around and, like, we'd order pizza and we would just get pen and paper out and we would just talk through, like, what is the story behind these? Like, I was pretty adamant on, like, that's how the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came to life, is the story behind them. If you just told somebody, hey, there's these karate turtles, people would be like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. But you build this, like, story behind it, and all of a sudden, it gives purpose and meaning to these. So we had kind of gone through these different ideas of, like, are they, like, bad guys? Are they like the turtles? They're this group of guys. And where we actually ended up falling is the kind of our backstory behind it is our main character is actually a human. His name is Aki, and he's, like, 18 years old, and his parents worked for 1M Robots. So 1M Robots in our world is like this giant, huge corporation. Think of like Apple. You know, it's just they're just this huge conglomerate. And 1M Robots, they make medical bots. They make, service bots. They make bots for all industries. And they had, and this was before Creator came out, so we didn't even know any of this stuff, but they had implemented AI into their robotics at 1M Robots, and robots took over, and it kind of caused this post-apocalyptic world. Well, Aki, the human kid, his parents worked at 1M Robots. They were high up in the company, and they were both killed by 1M. So 1M, the corporation, killed his parents because they knew too much. But before the dad passed away, he passed on this flash drive to Aki, which is the kid. So the kid is running around with this really valuable information. And so he's living in this post-apocalyptic world, and he is a super smart kid. He's like a super genius. And so he's actually the one that has kind of pulled all these robots together and got them back up and running. And they kind of become his crew or his posse that he's running with. And in our storyline that we're building, 1M is chasing Aki, trying to hunt him down to kill him to get this jump drive that he has with the information on it.
I like that a lot. Ray, as your background is in illustration and stuff, and you are in now this robot making era, how do you work illustration into this and work the part of you that likes photography, like that kind of stuff, into this project?
You know, my illustrations and stuff are completely different. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we actually worked with another illustrator for this because it's not my, you know, it's not my style, but, you know, we've definitely used my photography stuff to do product shots and, you know, and that's where I kind of came in is, you know, come in, we get some product shots, you know, set up the website, kind of doing all the back end stuff. you know, and as we get going and hopefully we, you know, use more illustrators, you know, for, we've talked about kind of putting maybe a comic book or something together. And so, you know, that might be where I come in a little bit more, is working with the illustrators and getting that kind of stuff going.
Yeah.
And keeping track of the story and, you know, because, yeah, we go over to Dave's house, we eat a lot of pizza, and, you know, I try to keep the notes together and, you know, what the story is and what we talked about and things like that. But yeah, so far, I mean, who knows? But so far, the illustration is separate. We have talked about kind of a next step, you know, for things at DCon next year, which, you know, I maybe some, you know, depending on what happens, I don't know how much we want to talk about that yet, but, you know, some of my stuff may show up. We'll see. I don't know.
I mean, the hope, one of the things that, especially when I see 1M Designs and I see how you guys are working together and the story of like robotics and things, the things that come to mind are like patent sheets where it's like the design and then you have all these lines that are like, this is this arm and this arm is a molecular whatever. And it like is almost like dissecting the robot and it's telling you what all the parts do, but it's just an illustration. My hope is that that is one day done by you guys so I can fill my walls. I have, if you notice on my left, I have wall space that needs to be filled by 1M things. So that's the hope. But when it came to, hopefully that fixes itself. When it came to packaging, what was the, there we go. What was the idea? Because if I remember correctly, it is almost like Pelican cases.
Yeah.
And that's, those are some heavy duty cases to like hold. Oh, I love that you have them. And then there's like the logo, which was clearly everywhere property. It's so good. How did you guys settle on that as a design choice for selling them?
Man, we had a lot of ideas for the packaging.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think that that one was obviously the best. And one of, you know, one of the things that we wanted, you know, is you see people walking around with bags at DCon and, you know, we wanted people, when they saw people walking around with those, that they were like, wow, what is, where did that come from? What's inside that thing?
Yeah.
So that, you know, I think that was one of the reasons we chose, one of many reasons we chose that.
Yeah, one thing that we looked at was, you've seen a lot of designers will use like the cardboard box and has the magnetic flaps and they're, they're really nice. But if you were to buy, you have to buy them in like bulk of 100 and they end up being about $6 a piece, but they have no foam inside of them. So then you start looking at the foam and the, that foam, I don't know if you've looked into like foam for inserts and stuff, but it is crazy expensive. So the foam was going to end up probably being about another $6 to $7 per box just for the foam. Now you're talking a $12, $13 box. Well, we found these online. We found them for, what were they, raised? $16 a piece?
Yep.
I think they were $16 shipped. And they had the foam inside of them already. And it was like a block of foam.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
So what I did was use the laser cutter and cut every single insert. Every lunch break, I'd go and cut like six of them. And so that ended up being, you know, like Ray said, we wanted it to still feel high end, but the cardboard boxes were going to end up just being a couple dollars cheaper. So we went we went this route and ended up, we found something that fit the size of our robot and kind of worked out for us.
It has a good
we
vibe.
Also, yeah. And we also went like, we went and like, we made vinyl stencils and we cut the part number for every robot is a unique number. Mm-hmm. So we spray painted. So it's part number 16. So this is robot 16. This is the 16th robot we made. And also another fun thing is each robot has, let's see if I can see it here. Yeah, like each robot it molded in the back of the head, we 3D printed each number of robot. So if you bought number 3, it would be 3D printed in the head as number 3. So each one was custom to the robot, to the box. And then we even made like these little signature cards and we like marked which robot you got, which number you had. So we were trying to make it as like this whole experience of like, wow, these are, because they're not mass produced toys. Like you would just go get molds made. These are all hand painted, hand sanded, hand assembled magnets. And it was definitely a labor of love for sure.
Yeah. It was cool to see, like I spent so much time at your booth talk. I think the hard part, especially with Toys on Tap, Ray, I'm like the perfect person to come see you. I will always start conversation.
Great.
You never have to
speak to me.
Yeah. And so it's like going to your booth and like talking and just being excited to see you again. And then meeting the whole team and seeing everything. And I spent so much time there like geeking out about it and stepping away when you guys were talking to people and then coming back. The rest of the day, if I saw someone carrying the case, I would be like, oh my gosh, you bought one of like incredible. Which one did you get? And so it was cool to have those little experiences, and they look like people are carrying guns because they're like the perfect size. And so it was like, uh-oh, like this is awesome, but someone's about to get in trouble. But it was really cool to have that because it looked, when you talk about packaging, I'm a nerd for packaging or making creative packages, and you guys nailed it. Like it was the perfect thing because no one does what you guys did. And so it stood out. Everyone saw it. And then your booth was like laid out so they could just be invested. It was just, it was a great, great job.
Well, thanks.
It was such a cool experience. It was such a cool experience to be there. Mm-hmm. And I, like Ray will attest to this, even on the drive out there, so long and like so many, like we work our day job. Till 5, and then we would get together and we would work. I would be printing, I'd have the printer running. I was so second guessing myself. And then when we got there and to just see people's reaction to it, and they're like just like blown away. They're like, this is amazing. And to have multiple people go, like, wait, you guys did this in like your living room and your daughter's bedroom? Like, are you kidding me? I thought you guys were backed by a huge company. Like that was kind of like, all right, we did it. We're not idiots.
One of the things for me, you know, people would come by and they're like, oh, you know what? I've only got so much money. Let me go look around. But, you know, then they would come back and they're like, you know, nah, I'm just going to spend my money on this. Mm-hmm. We had one person come and they bought one of the robots. And they're like, okay, I'm going to go, you know, spend the rest of my money now. And then they came back later and they're like, I didn't see anything I wanted to spend my money on other than another robot. So, you know, that was, I mean, for me, that was like the highlight, you know, just that they didn't know, you know, they were like, oh, I'm going to go buy some other stuff now. But, you know, all they were thinking about while they were walking around Decon, as we all know, there's, you know, so much amazing stuff there. Mm-hmm. And for them to just be like, I'm going to keep my money and I'm going to go back to 1M Robots and buy a second robot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was
amazing. I did hear the story that someone bought a full set, right? They walked up and said, I want one of each, which is unreal. Like that's greedy people. And I love it. Buy them all.
Yeah.
He was the first guy, I think, too. Our first customer bought all three. We looked at each other like, we did it. We tricked him.
Yeah.
He fell for it. No, it actually blew our minds because it put us at ease in a lot of ways.
So
in fact, I think I was going to say when he came, we had him on display and he was like, oh man, how do I order him? And we said, oh, you can buy him here. And he's like, wait, they're available right now? We're like, yeah, they're like right here. Cause we had him, I don't know if you remember, we had him kind of piled on the floor around us and he's like, give him to me. And we were like, what? That's nuts.
That's so sick.
Is he the guy that wanted the pink, the Cali bot as well?
He did. He was looking at some gal and he's like, so you're gonna buy it? And she's like, maybe. And then he's like, because if you don't, I will. And he had a really fun character about him. He was really passionate. And he was even telling us about his own collection. He's like, yeah, I have my own life-size K2SO in my garage. Like,
this gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy needs more. Yeah.
Legend.
I don't know if we still had it when you showed up because we had one custom one. Was that still there when you were there?
I don't think so. I think by the time I got to you guys, I only remember seeing the three.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we had one custom one that we made and it was like a pair of prototype pants that my mom made that were, they were pink and I painted him teal and it was like a custom one-off. In fact, even the head was just, it said P1 because it was like prototype one. So it wasn't even part of our collection. So we just made like, and we had it in a little plexiglass box and we didn't even put a price tag on it because it was kind of like, we just want to like have like some cool pieces to show. And so people were coming, they're like right off the bat, like Christian said, we probably had five people go like, is this one for sale? And we're like, oh. And so we're like, well, it's a stupid price.
Mm-hmm.
And this one gal came up and she's like, is this one for sale? We're like, yeah, it's a stupid price. We told her the stupid price and I'll take it. And we're like,
what? Wait, we got another stupid price.
Yeah. I was just kidding. It's now nine more. Yeah. What's crazy too is like watching. It's always a toss-up. I talk about this whenever I talk to people that are at DesignerCon. It's a toss-up of if I can go talk to people. Because when I talk to people, like, we're going to geek out for a second. Like, we're going to nerd out. We're going to talk about all kinds of toy things. But that's also going to take you away from people. And it's going to take you away from sales. And so I always try to walk that line. But with you guys, it was like so easy to watch people walk up and the second they saw it, they like got excited. So it was like, oh, that's my cue. And then I would step back in and it was just, it was great. So with that and all of these done, I do want to get to like the reception and how you thought people did and if you, like what you guys sold that day, but have you, with them wanting that one P1 robot, have you guys thought about like, we'll do a one-off. If you pay us this much money, we'll do a one-off and send it out and it'll be yours.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that and we've done some, you know, just some extra pieces.
There it is.
Yeah.
I'm working on one right now.
But we've done, you know, we've done some extra heads for people. The only problem with that, you know, is the most, you know, our customer base is at most 60 people. You know, because we only had 20 of three robots. So, you know, we've talked about making extra weapons, extra arms, you know, more heads that you can buy. One of the things that people loved at DesignerCon, which kind of, you know, that people were paying that much attention is that the tennis shoes that were on the Cyberbot. Oh my gosh. People were just like, this one, I want this one because of the shoes. I'm like, really? Okay. You know, and people asking, you know, well, can I put the shoes from this? Can I get this one with those shoes? And it's like, well, you know, they all, you can swap pieces, but right now the only way to get those shoes is on the Cyberbot. And And I think that, you know, at least for a few people, that was the deciding factor for shoes. I mean, out of the three, the Cyberbot is definitely my favorite, but, you know, it's not because of the shoes. I mean, the shoes are great, but
it makes I don't know if you've ever seen it at a tattoo shop. They have the you get what you get, where you like spin a dial and whatever comes down.
Yeah.
It almost feels like that could be done with just pieces of robots. Like you just get whatever comes down the chute, build your own dang robot like that.
Yeah.
The fact that someone would look at the shoes and say like, I want, how do I get those? That's nuts to me. That's so funny.
Yeah. That's crazy, but
that's cool. When you looked at DesignerCon and as you probably closed up shop and like packed up the booth and all that stuff, it seems like the reception of it was really high and that you guys set a bar that's like really high up there for everyone. So what does that mean for next year or this year? Like, what does that mean for going forward for 1M? How are we like either chasing that bar, setting a new bar? What are we doing with 1M?
Well, what was interesting is we had a lot of people stop by our booth and go out of their way to say, this is the best booth. I'm sorry, I'm not buying anything, but this is the best booth. And so a lot of the car ride was, how do we capture those people that were clearly interested, but had no idea we were going to show up? And they already decided in their minds, I'm going there for this bear brick, and this is where my budget is going. So a lot of the car ride was just discussing, how can we meet people at their level? Do we develop a new bot at a lower price point? And maybe it's more mass produced this time to a level where we're investing in tooling. Another option was, how can we make it more fun for the people that did invest and going to the booth itself? Doesn't mean we team up with other designers and they do their own exclusive iteration, whether it's a custom head, a custom paint job. And it was almost a little anxiety inducing the amount of options we went home with on that car ride, just so many different paths. Even to this point, we're still deciding on some. So I don't know what your takeaway was, Dave, but it's definitely a lot of options we were given.
Yeah, I think the car ride home was probably even more just confusion. Like, it was probably quieter on the way home than it was there, just because it was like our brains were like, what do we do next? Because to actually produce the 60 robots was just brutal. I mean, working full-time jobs and then having to do that and then hand paint everything. It was like, man, I don't know. It's like, it just was brutal. In fact, to be totally honest, I would say probably after DesignerCon, none of us did anything for like 2 months. So we probably didn't even get really back together until February and started talking again, because we were just like smoked. It's just so, it took so much energy. And like, since February, we've kind of been sketching out some ideas again and like kind of getting those juices flowing again. But yeah, to Christian's point, like there's so many paths, and it's like, what's the right path? What makes the most sense? And like Ray said, we took 60 robots and we sold 40 while we were there. So it was an amazing, like for us, we were able to pay all of our machines back, like all the 3D printers we bought. We made all of our money back, and we have like a tiny bit in like our 1M savings to actually like maybe buy a booth next year.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the we have an idea and we're kind of executing towards that, and hopefully that is what will work. But like Christian said, like, our idea, I don't want to tell too much because in case we have to pivot, but our idea, like Christian mentioned, was maybe to connect with a handful, maybe 10 to 15 other artists, and maybe do some sort of collaboration work with artists, and maybe even do like a small little gallery art show in our booth next year.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's kind of our thought.
That's what's tough. Like, I'm always excited to see what artists can do. I'm always excited, like, to host an art show or curate and do that stuff. You guys set this bar so high on just painting. Like, the paint apps on these things are already so high. So now when you're asking people, like, hey, give us your rendition, they have to look at that and say, like, well, okay, let's see what I got. but that's – it's a cool way to do that. And I think at a deeper level, when people start doing toys, sometimes they forget that, like, we have to give an offering to the toy gods as a part of this. But for us, it's more or less like, how do we recognize that we're in a larger community and pay homage to everyone? And so I think that that idea is like a good, it balances it out. So it's like, hey, we are just now a part of you. So that's an incredible idea.
Yeah. And I think you found this to be true in the toy community and in the maker community. It's such an incredible group of people. Mm-hmm. Even while we were at DesignerCon, we connected with so many incredible artists, and it was like, hey, let's keep in touch and let's talk through some things down the road. Like, it doesn't have to be today or tomorrow, but so there's some exciting things. I think probably to your point of like the level of our painting or what we've done, I think we're actually looking for artists that have their very specific, unique style, and what could they do with their style on our, whatever we'll come up with. And so it'll be very unique to them, because we don't want people to be like, hey, try and outdo us.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what's your killer, like, everybody knows you for doing this graffiti style or whatever it may be, or this cool cartoon character. Can you like work this piece and make it look awesome? So that's kind of our thought.
That's amazing. Yeah. So looking over all this and seeing 1M and what you got going on, and now telling us like what you've got coming up. Like that's the cool part. If you had to, I mean, maybe we'll save this for the nitty gritty. The nitty gritty is like a 10 to 20 minute piece following the podcast. We'll save that question for that one. As we close this out, we like to let the artists plug everything that they've got going on, all the different Instagrams, especially with three of you now all designing and all have an art background. So, please plug away and tell people where to go.
Ray?
Who's going?
It's you, Ray. It's you.
Wow. So you can follow me at Stumpt Workshop, STUMPT Workshop, on Instagram, Threads, all that stuff. I've got a show coming up at Stranger Factory, Toy Makers of Planet Earth, with a lot of great people. Junker Jane is having a bunch of pieces there. And yeah, if you've ever been to Stranger Factory, or if you haven't, you should go, in New Mexico. And yeah, that opens on March 24th, I think.
I got nothing to plug. Don't follow me. Go watch Dune 2. Go watch Dune 2.
Dave?
And I'm Dr. Toys on YouTube and Instagram, Dr. Toys. It's dr_toys on Instagram. And then 1M Robots is also on Instagram. It's just 1M Robots. And then we also have 1mrobots.com. If you're interested in looking at one of the robots and want to purchase one, we'll be happy to pack one up and ship it out to you.
Heck yeah. Thank you guys so much.
There's not many left though, so get on it.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap as a group.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.